read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
We always love when we welcome bookstores from our family of independents. They dispense terrific advice on books to pick up and enjoy. The fall season is upon us. I know we have a couple days till it's officially fall, but the fall season is upon us, whether you like it or not. And the folks from the Chatham Bookstore join us for this week's book picks. Today, Sharon Weinberg, Chatham Bookstore owner, is here, along with Amy Zimmerman, Chatham Bookstore manager. And it's a great pleasure to welcome both Sharon and Amy to the roundtable this morning. How are you both?
We're good. We're very happy to be here. This is our favorite thing. We had heated debates about what to pick because there are so many great fall reads out there. We've got Zadie Smith, Colson Whitehead, James McBride. It was very overwhelming, so we had to make some very hard choices. And I'm going to start, and I'm focusing on back to school. That's my theme.
Okay. Excellent.
Right.
Go.
Okay, so beginning with two very different novels, both about a young woman in college with a complicated love life. First, Kairos by Jenny Erpenbeck, an East German author. This book is ostensibly about a tumultuous love affair between Catherine, a 19-year-old student, and Hans, a 55-year-old married writer, that begins in East Berlin in 1986 and continues through the fall of the wall. The book starts with a tight focus on that relationship, but we gradually become aware of the importance to the plot of the political and historical setting, what it's like to be a privileged student and an establishment artist living in East Germany at that time. The key here is in the title. Kairos means the right time, a propitious moment. What we learn is that while the Western understanding of the fall of communism is a triumphant narrative, for some people, the transition to capitalism was a disaster. They essentially had no marketable skills. You can read this novel just for the compulsive love affair of modern Wuthering Heights, complete with a wildly jealous lover, but you will also gain some insights into how it felt to live at a decisive moment in a historically significant time.
It is, how did you pronounce it, Kairos?
I said Kairos.
Kairos.
Who knows?
I should check that.
I do know that Jenny Erpenbeck is the name of the author, so we'll go with that for the moment, but that sounds fantastic. Next up.
Okay, I'm going to continue with The Rachel Incident by Carolyn O'Donohue. You know how to pronounce that name.
Actually, with the GH, I do know how to pronounce that name, except that it was actually my conversation with Carolyn who said that with the GH, it's because I pronounce my name Donohue, and she said that the correct Irish pronunciation would be O'Donohue.
Wow, I screwed up both. Okay.
No, that's okay. No, I didn't know that till the end.
Good thing I
read
and I don't talk.
I love this book so much. She is a fantastic talent.
Okay. Loved this book also. Perfect. So it is also about a young woman in love, as you know, at a politically fraught moment, but the tone is light and breezy and very funny. The main character, Rachel Murray, is a pregnant journalist based in London, where she's written extensively about the legalization of abortion in Ireland. This book is mostly about her life as a student back in Cork in 2010 during the global recession. Rachel and her best friend James are living together as she finishes college, and he is building what will turn out to be a successful career as a screenwriter. She is a middle-class sheltered girl. He is a more worldly, working-class, semi-closeted boy, and their mutual adoration of each other sustains them through some harrowing adventures and complicated love affairs. Like Kairos, or Kairos, the political and social backdrop is pervasive. It shapes their behavior in ways that drive the plot, and only at the conclusion of the book do we fully understand.
Indeed. The name of the book is The Rachel Incident by Carolyn O'Donohue. Next.
Yeah, I think I'm up now. Thank you again for having us. It's always so great to be here. So I'm going to continue at this intersection of the personal and the political with a new essay collection by Miriam Gerba. Gerba's 2017 memoir, Mean, is one of my all-time favorite books about being a teenage girl, all of the chaos, hilarity, and terror. But listeners who haven't read any of Gerba's books might recognize her name from the controversy a few years ago over the book American Dirt. Gerba wrote an essay condemning the novel for its cliches and Mexican stereotypes. That piece went viral, and the book was supposedly canceled. Although I'm skeptical of using that word here, because American Dirt still became a New York Times bestseller, while Miriam received death threats for her critique. That essay about American Dirt is in Miriam Gerba's new essay collection, Creep, a book that bridges her work as a memoirist and a cultural critic, curating a wide range of writing all around the theme of creep. This collection is a flashlight and a microscope on creepiness in all its many forms, including predation, sexual harassment and abuse, and state violence. Creepiness is insidious, omnipresent, and always just under the surface. Everyone brings their own really complicated histories to the topics that Gerba is addressing here, including but not limited to intimate partner violence, the bad men of the literary and artistic canon, and the systemic devaluation and abuse of women of color. Gerba is able to succeed here by leading with vulnerability and the specificity of personal experience. In Creep, she applies her memoir's scalpel to herself, to her formative and traumatizing moments, before cutting into the culture at large. She's also really funny, even, especially, when writing through the dark. This is a compelling, urgent collection, proving once again that Gerba is so much more than one viral essay.
Creep is the name of the book by Miriam Gerba. Next up.
Next up is The English Experience by Julie Schumacher. I love dark academia, cynical takes on higher ed, and Julie Schumacher's trilogy are among my favorite books to recommend. The first two books, both available in paperback, chronicle the sad but hysterically funny battle between the downtrodden English department at fictional Payne University against the all-powerful economics department. The first novel, Dear Committee Members, introduces Jason Fitger, a beleaguered creative writing professor. That book won the Thurber Prize for American Humor, and fortunately, or unfortunately, it remains as relevant today as it was back in 2014. The Shakespeare requirement continues the saga. Jason Fitger is now chair of the English department, where he continues to fight the entitled encroachment of the arrogant and well-financed economics department. In the latest book, The English Experience, Jason is drafted to oversee a student trip to London. He assigns the students writing tasks, and we get to know them and learn about their adventures through these missives. It's a modern take on the epistolary novel. This book manages to be both ruthlessly funny yet also empathetic towards the students and the teachers trying to survive higher ed today, and it has a surprisingly moving conclusion.
The name of the book is The English Experience by Julie Schumacher. All right.
And next, I have the long-awaited second novel from Nathan Hill, whose debut, The Nix, was really widely read and critically acclaimed and has a lot of ardent fans. This book, Wellness, is, in a word, ambitious. At first, you think you're reading an intimate record of a relationship. We begin with the story of Jack and Elizabeth, their love at first sight through the windows of an apartment complex, culminating in a first meeting that quickly snowballed into an endless date, and then a relationship, and then a marriage. This is the story that Elizabeth and Jack tell at parties. But the real story, or as much of it as we can possibly know, is what Hill spends the rest of the novel telling. Over the course of this inventive, twisty novel, our quaint little love story gets completely turned on its head. Beneath that one agreed-upon narrative are all of the outside influences, hidden secrets, and inner machinations that were at work in this relationship from the very start. Before we can really understand Elizabeth and Jack, who they are and why they were drawn to each other, we need to understand their entire world. And by the end of this novel, somehow, we do. No wonder the book is 600 pages. Hill ambitiously concocts entire family histories and social political contexts in an attempt to answer the massive question of how and why two people in this world find and choose each other. I would especially recommend Wellness to readers who usually gravitate towards nonfiction. Hill goes off on all of these really wonderful and informative tangents throughout the book, on subjects ranging from the art world to social media algorithms, urban gentrification, and wellness culture. At the same time, he never deviates too far from the emotional core of the novel. That one marriage at the heart of this fast-moving, far-reaching novel of big ideas is a beautiful stillness at the center of the storm.
I dig novels that have bibliographies, and this one has a very large bibliography.
So it's a lengthy bibliography
that that mentions the topics. It's one of the best novels I've read this year. It's fantastic. It's one of those novels you read all 600 pages and you wish there were at least 400 more. He's so capable and wonderful in telling the story about people who occasionally make you cringe, but at the end you actually care about them and really want them to succeed in some way, shape, or form.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
The name of the book is Wellness. It is by Nathan Hill and is, I believe, officially comes out next week. Is that right? Am I right on that?
That sounds right.
I think that sounds right. Okay, next up.
Okay, my final pick is The Society of Shame by Jane Roper. Jane was a featured author at the recent Spencertown Book Fair. She read the opening scene of this novel, and I was totally hooked. It's a hilarious take on social media, how it brings us together and how it tears us down. The protagonist, Kat, is a betrayed wife who becomes an accidental celebrity. She embraces her new fame and turns into a combination raging narcissist / warrior queen. Roper skewers so many aspects of modern life. My favorite was a throwaway line about, quote, listening to but not really hearing an episode of This American Life about the significance of Hostess Twinkies in the lives of three very different communities. That's my NPR voice. But there's also a strong undercurrent of feminism. I've kind of buried the lead here because the cause Kat embraces, or that embraces her, is about freeing women from the shame, if not the inconvenience, of menstruation. Yes, it's a fight against Big Tampon. Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus was a big hit at our store, and for those looking for a similar great read, I'm recommending this new novel.
The Society of Shame by Jane Roper is the name of the new book. And finally.
Yeah, so my last pick is yet another book about a marriage, but I'm confident that it's unlike just about any other memoir on the subject. Everything I Have Is Yours by Eleanor Henderson is the true account of the author's 20-year marriage to her husband, Aaron, who is suffering from an undiagnosed chronic illness that affects every aspect of their shared life. This book is physically and emotionally exhaustive. Henderson has bravely let the reader into what one of her sons calls their sick house. You are in Aaron's pain and Eleanor's distress, his madness and her disbelief, their anger and hopelessness as this inexplicable illness perseveres and mutates over and over again. This book is so intimate, so honest, the story so personal and revealing for all parties involved, that I just kept asking myself these two opposing questions. How could Eleanor Henderson write this? And how on earth couldn't she? I would highly recommend this for a book group, or if you're someone who regularly reads a book so that you can pass it along to a friend. Because this is a book that demands a conversation, some group processing. And Sharon and I actually did just that. We each left this book with really different impressions of the marriage, of Henderson's husband, and of the illness itself. We debated what we would do in this situation and what we would advise someone else to do if they asked us. It's a real Rorschach test of a book. All of that being said, this memoir is also a lot more than just the questions and introspection it elicits in a reader. I think Henderson does so many things really successfully in this book. It is a medical mystery and it's a page-turner, but it's also a rich character study of Aaron, the writer's husband, someone who she has had the rare opportunity to observe over two decades through illness and mania, as well as moments of health, stability, and joy.
The name of the book is Everything I Have Is Yours by Eleanor Henderson. That is a wonderful list. Anything else you'd like to add in our final moment together?
Sure. Just one little thing. If you're in the Chatham area or willing to venture to the Chatham area, next Saturday, September 30th, we have Oktoberfest coming up in Chatham. It's a really amazing day. It's a great way to usher in the season. We have food, music, all sorts of vendors. So we would love to see you there at Chatham Oktoberfest.
For more information on the Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York, you can visit them at 27 Main Street in Chatham. Amy and Sharon, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure, as always, to have you on the program.
Thank you.
You can find out more about their wonderful bookstore by going to chathambookstore.indielight.org. You can also see the complete list on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.